And now, from beyond our dimension, this is the Jeff Mara Podcast. Here's Jeff.
My guest is Chris O'Connor, who was recently on to talk about his near-death experience. Well, after having that conversation with him, I found out that he was a member of the Secret Space Program, so I've asked him to come back and tell us all about it. Chris, welcome back. It's great to see you again.
Hey, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for asking.
I had another guest that was a member of the SSP, and I think it all came back to him later after he returned. How did you discover those memories?
Yeah, that's I've always had some memories. I just thought they were dreams or, I was a little kid, so my parents would say I just had a vivid imagination. And that's just, I assumed that's the case, right, for a good portion of my life. So I always carried some memories with me. But then after about 20-ish years ago or so, I began to realize that these are real. These are actual memories because they never faded. They never changed. They were always exact. And they were very impactive. And so the good thing about that is it kept my mind open my whole life. I knew that there was something more to life. And that we weren't alone and that there were things we don't know, as a daily citizen. And so just inherently understood that. So then I began to understand that these were actual memories of experiences that I had off planet, on ships or even maybe on Earth, but in other places working with other beings. And then certainly on a space station outside of Saturn. But I didn't know where those were. And I still don't know where some of those locations and memories were from. But what I did was once I started accepting the fact, that was kind of the first thing I had to do, was accept the fact that these are memories and I'm not crazy. And once I accepted that, then what happened was those began to integrate, I guess, in my subconscious or in my conscious mind. And they came out. And then they started to make sense from other memories. I started to be able to, I could sort of stitch them together a bit more. And that was kind of the process. And then the more I did it, and then I got into meditation where I, you could silence the mind, the analytical mind, and then kind of access the subconscious. And then that those memories can also begin to kind of float to the surface, so to speak. And that's kind of been my process of recovering memories or stitching the ones I do have together.
So are you saying that these started out as dreams and perhaps recurring dreams, like the same dream every night?
In some cases, but mostly I thought they were dreams, but I would remember them during the day. So, I was a vivid daydreamer also. And I just accepted them for that because I didn't think these things were possible, especially being a kid and a little older. But yeah, they sort of started off that way.
Do you dream of people that you've never even met?
I do. Yeah. And it's usually quite vivid.
How do you think that you were put into this program?
Yeah, that I do remember. That was one of the recovered memories that I did once I started working on trying to recover some of the information that I know is there, but I couldn't make sense of it. They were just visual images for the most part. And some of them were quite scary. And because I had memories of when I was about 2 years old, I was taken from my crib. And that was in 1970. So I was born in 68. In 1970, I was taken at two, and I was, I'm not sure what they called it, but I just call it age advanced. They have the technology, which is not a difficult thing to do if you know how, to create it's like a gel. It's like a lavender, purpley, semi-viscous gel that they grow. And this is a technology that the SSP got from another race. I don't know who, but they traded it for something, I'm sure. And then what they do is they get a sample of your DNA and they grow this gel. Now, I'm only two, so, you know, not that big, obviously. So they put me in a tank, really. I don't remember what it looked like other than being put into it. And I was essentially drowned in this gel. And what that gel was a growth, rapid growth gel. And they, in order for that to really work, what they had to do is put needles all throughout my body internally to go to certain organs. And then that same gel is injected so that you're growing on the inside and the outside at the same time. And I was in there, I don't know how long, but I think it, you know, it was like probably five-ish weeks. But I was moved out at one point. You know, when I was small, it was a small tank, but then they put me in a larger one and I remained in that one for the rest of the time. But I do remember the process. And once I was grown to about my mid-20s, then what they did, they took me out of this, you know, tank. And then there's this process that they do of having the ability to unlock memories. They can unlock memories. They can remove blocks of memories. They can move your consciousness. They have all that technology. And so what they did was they went in and they, with technology, unlocked my memories. So that now I'm a 25-year-old with all the memories of my former lifetimes, of the reason I'm there, because I had agreed to do this, part of my soul family, my group, and my higher self agreed that I needed to go through this program so that I could be an Earth representative in some form or fashion on a space station near Saturn. So I had to go through this process. So the first 20 years, I was to serve the United States, and that's what I did. I can't say for sure it was the Navy or it was the Air Force, because I worked with both. I have flashes of memories of working with both, and I see a lot of the people I worked with. I remember what they look like, and I don't know their names. I guess something I don't remember too well. And so for the first 20 years after they unlocked my memories, I worked with technology that could, you know, transfer consciousness and, you know, could remove blocks of memories. And this is what they do when you exit the program. They do this technology on you. And then they just, you know, take you back and let you fend for yourself, unfortunately. But what they did with me, they put me back as a 2-year-old, and that was 60 years later. So I spent 60 years off planet.
So they put you back at the same exact time that they took you?
Within a few seconds. And the only thing that was mysterious was that I had somehow gotten from my crib to, I believe it was the closet. I think it was in a hallway. And they couldn't figure out, my family couldn't figure out how I'd gotten from the crib to the closet, and the door closed. So I don't know why they did it that way, but seems they could have just taken me right back and dropped me in the crib, but that's not what happened.
To bring you back to the age of two, I guess they reversed you back to a 2-year-old somehow.
Not in my case. I've heard in other cases, but I don't know that they can regress your age and your body. In my case, they advanced it. But what they would do, because the nature of my work was and many people are in this scenario, is they would create a copy of you. People call them clones, but they're really not clones. They're more of a copy, because a clone would indicate a consciousness and everything. And there's no consciousness in these. These are just copied forms in case there's a problem, which did happen. I was killed at one point and moved into one. But what they did was they had one at the same age at 2 years. They'd made another copy and kept it at the age of two and suspended it.
All right. And then I guess they just transferred your consciousness back into that.
Yeah. Without the memory of my 60 years, or at least the attempt to take out that. Because I was quite belligerent. And I'm like, I'm going to remember this. And they're like, no, you're not. I am going to remember this. They're like, no, you're not. You know, because I'm sure they gave me a double dose, you know, when they erased my memories. But there's some things I remembered.
So you were representing the United States in what capacity?
For the first 20 years, I didn't represent the United States. What I did was I worked with memory transfer. I worked with consciousness transfer. I worked with memory extraction, deletion. And I did other things as well. I did security detail out in the desert, and I'm not sure where that was, but it, you know, so there's a lot of little things that I remembered doing. But mostly I remember the technology I was working with, and I brought that through as well. So that was part of the process, because my agreement with them was to bring that back. But I changed it so that what I do, you can't extract memory or consciousness from it. It's a different thing. The first 20 years, you know, I was, I believe, mostly on Earth, if not fully on Earth, or in a spaceship, you know, near Earth, because I remember traveling a lot. But it was after the first 20 years, I'd fulfilled my agreement with the U.S. government. And then I went to Mimas, which is the first moon outside the rings of Saturn. It's actually a space station. And then I served the United Nations in the capacity of they had an embassy there. And I was there working with a lot of different races. And my strength was empathy, empathic, and then telepathy, and being able to hear. Mostly I could hear other species speak to me, or they would show me images and things. Those I could receive better than I could send, because, you know, it was just the physical human form isn't quite as capable. But I did my best. And that was pretty much what I did there, was work with a lot of different races.
Can you recall what some of these races looked like?
Very much so. Yeah, there were so many. There was one race that I worked with that they were, as far as I understand, they were mixing two different races, and one was Arcturian, one was Andromedan, and they were somebody I worked with kind of daily, and they were very kind of like a light blue gray kind of color with really amazing eyes, and then there were some tall, what we'd call tall grays, that we worked with, because they're not all, you know, bad and evil. Of course, you have factions that are, but not all of them are. Then there were just some very blue beings that I guess it would be like an amphibian skin. So you'd see their skin, like us, is quite, you know, opaque. With them, it was fairly translucent. And there was a bunch of different colors. It was almost like there was glitter, but not quite. It was just, they were sparkly. And they had this, so they had a beautiful blue sparkling skin, and then straight white hair. It's like their hair was like sort of fake looking. It was just pure white. And it was, they all had like a split down their head, center of their head, and their hair came straight down. It was just cut off. They all looked, I believe they were probably a race of clones, because they all looked almost exactly alike. There's a slight difference between the male and female. But they are very loving species. I've met species that this one looks sort of like, you know, how a crab, when it kind of pulls in its claws, it all kind of makes a single shape. They kind of do that, but they're more like an egg shape. And they look fairly human, except for that. They can pull in their arms and pull their head down, and they make like this, I guess it's a defensive thing. There were, of course, there were lion, you know, feline races. There were some canine races. There were some giant races. They looked just like human beings, but they were like 18, 20 feet tall. There was a race that were, they looked like a monkey or like a macaque. They were very, very loving, and they love human clothing. So they copy, you know, some of what they saw from Earth humans. And just, yeah, there's just tons. Tons of races. And the more I think about it, the more they come through. But, you know, we could be here forever.
When you say feline races, would you say that it was a humanoid body with like a feline head and perhaps a tail?
Yeah, I don't remember tail. It could have been. It's just that they were quite humanoid. And, you know, their fingers, it was like they had like more sharp finger end tips. So they weren't blunt like ours are, but they were quite hairy, you know, of course. And speaking of that, there was, you know, the Sasquatch or Bigfoot that we know here on Earth, that's an alien race.
They just kind of phase in and out or something?
Well, they can, because a lot of them are highly, highly telepathically connected to the energies. Here we know them as Earth energies. They're universal energies outside. And then when you're connected to that, the things you can do are miraculous, and they seemed like magic to us, but really it's just the manipulation of energy.
What do you think's going on out there, and why isn't the public aware of all this stuff?
Well, a couple of reasons. Well, several, I'm sure. The primary ones are because it's been going on for a very long time, you know, at least the 40s, you know, and what happened was because there was technology involved, there was money to be made in technology. And so these corporations came in, individuals that were in government, and they wanted to maintain those technologies for themselves to make money. So what they did was they had the government, or the military essentially, basically create what they called, I don't know if it was originally called the Disney factor, or it might have been called the cartoon factor. And they also now call it the laugh factor. So if somebody would have mentioned, I saw a UFO, what they did was they put it on in the newspaper, on the radio at that time, and then subsequently the news. So if somebody said that they saw, you know, an alien or something, they would be ridiculed into not repeating that story. It was like a pretty brilliant plan, because it's worked up for the last several years. It's changing. They wanted to keep technology for themselves, and people are still pretty much nervous about admitting the things that, you know, they hear, things that I'm saying that, yeah, they sound crazy. Absolutely, they sound crazy based on what we were being told throughout our society and culture to this point. So, yes, they sound crazy, but in the future, they're going to be like, it'll be everyday information, you know? So people are just concerned and afraid of being rejected. I think that's another main one. There is a defensive factor. You know, you have many factions in our military that are afraid that we're going to be taken over, because that's the mindset of protection, you know, self-preservation. So self-preservation is control, and control is lack of information, you know. And so though they may mean well, what they're really doing is holding back all of humanity and all of our society, for sure. So it's a military control thing for defense. It's a control thing so that they can control the technology, and you know, making people feel badly if they do tell their story.
Overall, would you say your memories are positive or negative?
Oh, very much positive. Very much. There are some negative, but I don't really share those too much, because they don't really help, you know, and it was just part of my personal experience. But for the most part, you know, my job on MIMAS was to come together, and we were to negotiate contracts for trade, you know, or for an outpost on a planet or somewhere. And so we had to negotiate these things, and that's just what it is. There's no money out there. It's just trade. They trade whatever everybody wants. And a lot of what we had to do, or the most common thing that I remember, is we had to apologize all the time for other human groups that are out there. People call them the Dark Fleet. I guess you could say it's them. But it's just negative Earth humans that are out there doing things that they really shouldn't be doing, you know, some really terrible things. But the way this works universally, one of the very primary universal, I'm not say law, but, you know, realities, is that when a race like humans now are evolving up and they're becoming more galactically aware, then if we leave the planet and a small group does something bad, they're still Earth humans. So Earth and all of humanity, every single person has to account for that if necessary. So that's a big part of what our job was, and what I did was to make things right when bad things were done by some of the bad humans that are out there. But it works on a spiritual level too. You know, that's why I tell people, don't judge one another and work to accept and just love them for who they are, whether you agree with them or not. It doesn't matter what the issue is, you know, because the whole of humanity, I know there was a planet called Maldek that whole race blew that planet up. They were fighting amongst themselves. Well, because they blew up their own planet and they were fighting with themselves, every single being that was on that of the same race that was on that planet was held responsible. And they were kept, and it took them hundreds of thousands of years to actually begin to release that trauma. And that can happen to humanity. If we get into a third world war, which I do not believe we will, I don't think that's our future. But if we did, and if we blew up, you know, our planet, or we destroyed most of humanity, every single one of us are equally responsible. So that's why we have to start getting along and have to start loving one another, no matter what our differences are. You know, and that's one of the big things I learned out there. And to me, that's very positive. And most of the races are very loving, for the most part, and compassionate to especially Earth humans, because they know that this is a very difficult planet to incarnate on. So they're pretty compassionate for the most part.
Isn't the remains of Maldek what makes up the asteroid belt out there?
Yes. Yes. And in fact, those beings are what there are two species, main species of the Sasquatch, Bigfoot. One of them evolved on Earth just through natural evolution. And so they have a more of a second density of more of an animal brain, like a true ape. And then there's another race. Those are the ones that people say that they can see them disappear, or their eyes glow red. Those are the ones that are, it was the race from Maldek. And they came to Earth to reincarnate here to continue their third density experience, because they didn't want to be in society like humans are, because they didn't want to repeat their mistake of blowing up Maldek. They didn't want to do that to Earth, because they had already learned their lesson. And they're like, this is sort of their penance they put upon themselves. And they chose to live in outside of what we would consider society. It's their society, but it's a very natural world for them. And so that's their way of kind of making amends.
Are there any television shows or movies that you've seen that kind of approximates what it's really like out there?
You know, there are. It's my true belief that a lot of the sci-fi shows, especially the newer ones, are very much soft disclosure. I think the one that's probably the closest in a lot of ways is the newer, the Star Trek Discovery. They have quite a few things on their technologies. And then, of course, the whole Star Wars saga is a very simple version of the Orion Wars. That's what that essentially was based on. And a lot of these writers don't realize what they're doing. In fact, there's a writer of one show that I kind of helped with some ideas for technology. And I was talking to him, and I'm like, you know, do you, because he already done one movie. I was helping him with his sequel to this movie. And I'm like, do you realize how much truth you have in your movie? And that he goes, well, how do you think that is? I'm like, well, you were guided by your spirit guides, or, you know, your soul family. You know, he goes, oh, I don't think so. I don't know about that. He said, but I do know I had a muse the whole time. I'm like, that's the same thing.
Can you tell us about the Orion Wars?
The Orion Wars, honestly, isn't something I know much at all about. You know, I just know that there was, you know, a group, well, several groups in the Orion section of our galaxy that kind of began conquering. And we know some of them as the Greys. And we also know some of them as one faction of the reptilians, that they were out there and they were just continue to conquer solar systems and planets and just kept, you know, moving and moving and moving and moving and conquering and creating larger, you know, areas that they controlled or they thought they owned it. They consider themselves the owners. And that included our solar system as well. And they came here to basically conquer this planet. And, you know, Earth is pretty special in a number of ways. And there were some interesting life forms at the time. And they just came to do experiments. So the Orion Wars was, it's your classic good guy against the bad guy, you know, people rebelling against being conquered. So essentially that's the basis for that.
Since you've been back, have you been contacted by ETs or do you see UFOs?
I do. I have been, and I do. It's not super common. They'll come, it kind of comes in groups or, you know, time frames. I've seen tons of lights, tons of stars, you know, what looks like stars moving and doing things. And I've seen full on UFOs, big boomerang shape, you know, UFO. I've seen just giant orange lights that glow up on the bay. You can't see the ship necessarily, but then this orange light turns on. And then you could see the light glowing a little bit. You could tell it's the bottom of a ship. I have seen a couple of things out in nature that I'm like, oh, yeah, I think I recognize you. So, yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, it's not a daily thing, but yeah.
Did you ever learn about the history of humanity and if humans originated on Earth or were we brought here?
Yeah. A couple of things I do know, as a side note, is that we're not the original Earthlings, intelligent life form. The original ones were raised up through the reptilian era. They're still around. They're one of the reptilians that people say they see, but they're not the really aggressive bad ones that came here. The Anunnaki, people call them, but that was a grouping of a different species. These are a race that evolved from the Hadrosaur dinosaur, and they've always been on Earth. I mean, for tens of millions of years, if not hundreds, I don't know how long, probably hundreds really of millions. So they were the original Earthlings. And so when the what we call the Anunnaki, those people came in, then they started experimenting. And there's, I don't know for sure, but I think it sounds pretty accurate that they wanted basically a slave race to do their bidding. And they were geneticists. And so they just wanted to create new life forms anyway. And so that's really where it began with humans, that we were based in the primate world. And then they began, we're actually 23, technically 22, but then there's the chromosome difference between male and female, human male and female. But we were basically 22 separate species from around the galaxy. So their geneticists bringing in all this genetic material and they put us together, you know, and then they kind of do these mixes and try different things for many thousands of years. And then they would create a big, you know, big group, hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many, of these beings. And then they would use them as slave labor. Then we would rebel. So they would wipe us out. And they did that six times. So we are the seventh incarnation of that race, but we're the most advanced, most intelligent, most refined. And we will not be wiped out this time. It's just not what's going to happen. The Earth is on a different trajectory than it was in the past.
I guess they finally got it right.
They got it right, but it didn't really go in their favor even now. But good for them. Good job.
You mentioned that they don't use money out there. What does the Earth have that's valuable that's used for trade?
Well, originally it was just our resources, you know, our metals, especially gold. And they just came here for, again, it was a good planet to do experimentation on. So basically now what it is it's not so much that we have anymore anything to give them except people. And unfortunately, historically, our governments have been willing to allow abductions. I can't say they do anymore because that kind of went all wrong. But now, if anything, it's unfortunately people themselves that they would be interested in. So there is still some stuff to be worked out, you know, to get some of that stuff no longer being traded. You know, it's unfortunate, but I think it's on its way out also, because really what's happening is that we're much more protected now than we ever were some years ago. I don't know, thousands. I don't know how long ago for sure. These races came in. It's probably 10, 12, 15,000 years ago, because there was no protection for the Earth. This is why the pyramids were built, was to... Because there's an electromagnetic grid around the whole planet. That's just natural. The ley lines, those are just energy pathways connecting each other. That's a natural occurrence. So what they needed to do was create not a force field, but something like that, an energetic field around the Earth in addition to the electromagnetic field. So what they did was they started building pyramids. And these pyramids, because of the shape of the pyramid, the Earth energy always spirals up and out of the planet everywhere, every square centimeter. That's what happens. Some places are stronger than others. So they placed pyramids wherever these stronger emanations of energy coming from the Earth were. And so the shape of the pyramid, as this swirls up, it condenses the energy. And by the time it reaches the top, it's a very dense energy. And then that would shoot up into the atmosphere. And then it would become like a shield around the whole planet. And that would keep these negative forces that had been doing all the genetic work and all of the other stuff, and just various races, really. They would come in, and then they would not be able to penetrate that shield because it's a higher vibration than they can penetrate without alerting the other forces that were in charge of it, which were very positive people that are still around, still waiting for us to get our act together. So I forgot where I was going with that, but basically, you know.
Well, do you think the pyramids are still in use? Because, you know, they're kind of falling apart and ones in other countries may be covered in dirt.
Well, they don't really work like they used to work because the stars have moved. The Earth has changed its axis. You know, it's just part of the natural process. And we don't need them anymore, actually, because, you know, 15,000 years ago, the Earth was a different place. You know, the Earth is evolving just like we are. The Earth's vibration is raising. So as that vibration raises, you no longer need to focus that energy field because it's already naturally that high now. So there are no... Well, there are very few negative forces coming into Earth anymore. There are some that are here because they were here when this grid was placed, and they can't leave. You can't get out, or you can't get in. So basically, that's our shield of protection right now. But
interesting that you said you can't get out or get in, because I've had another guest talk about that the Earth is the prison of the galaxy. And this is where they, you know, put all the bad spirits as well as the rebellious ones. Do you have a take on that?
Historically, I would agree with that. Not in the last couple thousand years or so much. It's much more difficult now, you know, because the photonic rate, or the rate of the photon, the vibrational rate of the photon has raised over the last number of years in our lifetimes. Because when I was a kid, you looked up at the sun, it was yellow. Now you look up, shouldn't be staring for too long, but you look up, it's white, you know, because the photonic rate of the sun has increased. Well, we're receiving that light. We're receiving those photonic bursts. And so it raises the photonic rate of all photons here on Earth. And so that raises the vibration of Earth to a higher, what we call a fourth density level. Now, the fourth density positive, which is what Earth is, cannot sustain third or fourth density negative vibrations. So a soul would have to be very powerful right now to come into Earth and incarnate. So there are very few really negative people being incarnated on Earth now. Some of these beings that have been here live for hundreds of years. So, you know, they've been here for a while, and until they die off, they're just going to be here. And then you have some what we would consider negative second density soul spirits that are from Earth, that actually evolved on Earth. And so we can't kick them off. This is their home, you know. And so that won't change. They'll evolve on their level and their timing because, you know, all things become positive eventually. You know, so that's the trajectory of the Earth at the moment. So it used to be a prison planet. I could see where that would be the case, but not anymore.
Do you think that there are beings walking around among us that either look like us or can cloak themselves to look like us?
And have that's a great question.
And have you met any?
I have, and I was in Palm Desert, California, out in the hills. And I knew this hiker that I had come across, there's this resonance, because I've met so many of them, I can tell the different resonances a little bit. They're very, very subtle, and I have to be paying attention, otherwise I would miss it. But he's just staring in my eyes on the way by, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Hey, how are you? You know, kind of thing. And there was no response, but it wasn't somebody I wanted to spend time with. Didn't have that kind of positive resonance. But yeah, there are.
Do you think he knew that you identified him?
Oh, he's much more intelligent than I was. I'm sure of it. And definitely knew. Yeah. You know, and I think that's probably happened 2-3 times in my life. I think I was in Las Vegas. That happened also. Very, very tall woman. And she was just really fascinating, but had the resonance of something that was very different on a soul level. And I've actually heard that some of those races out there near Groom Lake and stuff will kind of work their way into Vegas. But it's interesting that you ask that question about whether we can or can't, or are we being cloaked or whatever. Because part of what, when they were doing the Anunnaki were doing the genetic research on humanity, what they did was they put in, they call them switches, where they, on their resonant telepathic field, know how to turn switches on and off, you know, through a vibration that they can emit, because they're highly advanced, you know. And so they can be standing right in front of you, looking exactly like they normally look. It could be reptilian, it could be any other alien look. But they're telling your brain through this switch that you're seeing something else. So you're seeing a human. So it can be that. And I've also heard of, I don't recall ever meeting them, but I've also heard of beings that can change their form, you know, which I guess isn't a surprise. If you can manipulate energy, you can manipulate energy, whether it's your body or outside of your body. And then there are a few percentage of the thousands of races that look exactly like humans, you know, so that you would never know the difference anyway.
I've had a couple guests talk about that there are caves underground here on the planet that are full of human alien hybrids that they're waiting to release. You know anything about that?
I have heard of, and I do recall that there was a program to try to replace humanity some years ago. And I don't know where that stands right now. And the only way that would happen is if there were a nuclear war and most of humanity was wiped out. Then they would just basically be available vessels to continue, you know. So say if I died and I wasn't eligible to move on to a fourth density experience, I had to come back and repeat third and Earth wasn't ready to let go of all the third density beings, then I might come back as this form to continue my experience. But usually what happens is you go to another planet at that point. But
do you think that there are negative entities here that want to cause some kind of cataclysm to prevent us from moving into the fourth density?
They've certainly been here to try to affect it as much as they can. They know they can't stop the Earth from fourth density evolution. They can't stop it because this happens on every single planet. It's just the way it is. Every with intelligent life, this is the process. They can't stop it, but what they can do is they can come here and create havoc, create dissension, make people hate each other for war purposes, to continue fighting amongst ourselves. And what that does, that keeps us separate from one another. And when we're separate from one another, we don't have a cohesiveness as a race. And that lack of cohesion allows these negative entities to enslave individuals, which is their goal, you know, because they say an entity can come down, incarnate their negative vibration, and they control people the whole time they're here. If they fully controlled that person in life, when that person dies, they're still in control of them. And so that's their goal, because it's all about energy. It's all about harvesting energy. And the energy that we emit as a soul is pretty powerful. But when we're incarnate and we have this physical form and we're creating energy as we speak, we're nuclear power plants, you know, and so they just feed off of that. And that's one of the things I do, is I help people let those get, cancel those contracts, get rid of those attachments, and send them on their way. And that frees people up. And so, you know, that's why a lot of them come in, is to find people to control, you know, and usually that's through anger, hatred, and fear.
For people who didn't see our previous podcast, you spoke about your pre-birth memories and how you were sitting at a computer looking out the window at Earth, planning out your life, and how you were not human. Can you kind of tell my audience about that, for the people who missed it last time?
Yeah, sure. It's pretty much that. We do. Okay, I'll start a little lower in evolution. As we grow up on an evolutionary scale, we have to have a number of experiences in an intelligent form. Okay. When we've had enough of those experiences, you know, we would automatically reincarnate before we have a full consciousness and awareness of the process. And so we may have thousands of lives unaware that we're automatically reincarnating. But once we become aware of it, when we do die and we go to soul family, we meet with our higher self, which is ourself in the future. It's literally you, but from the future, coming back to help. Then it's no longer automatic. So I had been around for a very long time. So when I would go, and you know, this life ends, I'll go back, I'll go through a healing process, because we all do. We got to get over some of the things we did, and you know, to us and to others. So once we get through that process, then we choose our own life, and then at that point we can choose our own parents. And so one particular time when I was coming into this body, I remember being up on a ship. We were, Earth was pretty big, you know, out the window. And we were over the North American continent, because that's where I was going to incarnate to work with the U.S. government. So we were just there. And then there was a computer on the left-hand side. And I was going fast forward and fast reverse, looking at different aspects of my life if I chose this set of parents. And, you know, if certain circumstances happened, how would this lead to the end of my life or the fulfillment of my life? Because there were certain things I wanted to accomplish and goals I wanted to accomplish and things my soul needed to learn. So I just went through, I decided on which set of parents I was going to choose, because they, for whatever reason, got me to where I needed to be on a soul level. And then they also would be in the position that I could, you know, work with the government, you know, in the way I wanted to do it. And so that was the best choice of these. I had narrowed it down to three sets. So I narrowed it down to the pair of parents that I wanted. And then I stood on this round, it looks like a giant emerald, you know, just a little round pad with gold, four gold knobs on it. So just like little bumps. So it's a flat emerald with a little bump and then gold lines running from each bump along the floor, up a wall, and into a computer. And so as you stand on these four bumps, two would be on your heels and two would be near the ball of your feet. So you're like connected to these golden, well, they're not electrodes, but golden, you know, knobs. Then so now I'm standing on these, you know, four golden bumps. And I put my arms out because what happens at that point is you go into, you're connected to the computer, which is the matrix of Earth. And this is the way that my race entered the matrix. There's technologies that are shared and other ones do it in different ways, but this is how we did it. And I had to show that I was willing to go. So I put my arms out, close my eyes and fall forward. Well, that was saying, you know, giving permission for them to put me into the matrix. And so that's how I got here.
Do you ever think about that you're tired of being human and you're ready to go back to being what you really are?
That's interesting because it's not so much that I feel that I'm tired of being human. I can get tired of Earth a bit, you know, just because there's so much negativity between people. Because I love humanity. I mean, I wouldn't be here if I didn't. I don't think most of us would. But I do become tired of some of the behavior that I find is so unkind and unnecessary. And that gets kind of tiring.
It's probably hard to really give a number, but what percentage of the population do you think that is here is not human?
It's huge. It's a big, big number. If I were to guess, I would say somewhere around half, you know, of everybody you see, whether they're aware of it or not, wasn't a native Earthling. You know, they just came here, you know, because when a planet is moving from third to fourth density, which is where we are now, and the race is moving to that third to fourth density, that's when all the negative races come in to try to control individuals. Because when we're full fourth density, they can't do that. We're out of their reach. So this is like the most desperate, most intense time on any planet with any race evolving from third to fourth density. So a lot of other races come here for the experience of helping humanity or to help humanity or to help their soul during this, because it's a difficult time. And it's well known in the galaxy, if you're going to advance your soul, you know, quite a bit in the shortest period of time, go to Earth. That place is tough. Go to Earth. Incarnate on Earth if you want to evolve quickly. And so it's pretty common. It's commonly known about.
Well, the population of the planet keeps increasing, and we're up to about 8 billion now. Why do you think that is?
It's the battle, you know, like I said, at this time, most negative entities can't incarnate any longer. But until that point, they were incarnating quite quickly. And so there's still a lot of negative souls here. That's why we have all the troubles we have. And until everybody begins to die off and reincarnate. So right now, those negative souls, if they were to die off, they wouldn't be able to reincarnate on Earth unless they were very, very powerful. They would go to a negative place to continue their experience if they were eligible to fourth density. If they were not eligible to fourth density, they would go into storage until there's another planet that's a full third density, so behind Earth in its evolution, to continue their third density experience. And if you were on Earth now and you're very positive and you're eligible for fourth density, when you die, you'll come back to Earth. And this is provided you're a Earth race, native Earthling, or you're from another race and you got to Earth and you forgot you were from another race, you got lost in it and you were caught in the incarnation cycle of Earth, then you would continue as an Earthling until you eventually remembered who you were. That may be a few lifetimes. You know, everybody else, and when they die and they're from another race, they'll go back to their soul family or their native race, because they're not the same thing. And then they'll go back and go through their healing process and maybe come back to Earth or go to another planet and help another planet. So,
are you aware of a timeline when the Earth will be fully in the fourth density?
I do know for a fact that the whole of the Earth will be fully fourth density in less than 100 years. Now, that sounds like a long time, but when you're talking about geologic evolutionary time, it's a flash. So somebody born now could see a full fourth density Earth, and it could be, you know, 80 years, it could be 60. All I know is just less than 100.
All right. I guess it's not anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean it's not going to be great, and it's not going to be really a completely different place in 20 years. I believe it will in a lot of ways, but it just won't be fully fourth density.
Have you ever been compensated in any way for the work that you did off planet?
Not that I recall. I was promised compensation. I do remember that, but I haven't received it.
What do you expect to get? Any idea?
Part of what I made them promise me, which is nothing if you think about the number of hours that you spend out in this work. Part of my final contract agreement for the third 20-year period was a retirement plan with a $3 million payout benefit. And, you know, that hasn't happened yet. So,
from all your memories, what inspires you about the work you did off planet?
Oh, man. The beauty, the vastness of various species, the different levels of love. And this is the fourth density lesson, is humans are going to begin to learn what love actually is. You know, that intense love that we feel for somebody when we fall in love, or you have a child or even a pet that you have this intense love for, that's just the very beginning of what love is. And when you're out and you're seeing it, and you're seeing and you're feeling the frequency and vibration of the true love light that exists out there in most races, it's just like, that's what makes it hard to be on Earth sometimes, is when I remember that, I make that connection. I remember the love, the indescribable feeling that you get of acceptance, you know, and that's probably the most memorable thing about it.
Yeah. Well, last time we also talked about the Deems device, and I don't remember what we said last time, if there were downloads or whatever, but were they downloads, or was this something that you remembered while being in the program?
Well, it's interesting. When I was in meditation one day, I wasn't thinking about technology or any, I wasn't even thinking about off-planet stuff at all. I was just, you know, being in the moment. And suddenly it's like this bolt of lightning struck me, and the Deems came into my mind. It wasn't called the Deems at the time, but I could see it. And I knew everything about it. I knew how to build it. I knew what to do with it. I knew what it could do. Then I began to remember, that's what I keep seeing in one of my memories that I had as a child. You know, I remember them using it on me. And I was arguing, saying, because they were going to take my memories before my service was over, right? That was like my last moment, you know, and they put it up to my head, and I'm telling them, I'm going to remember. I'm going to remember. No, you're not. And they pushed the button and I was out. So I thought it was a download for, you know, a few months. But then I realized when I had all these other memories coming in, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's not a download. These are memories. Like, oh, and then it just like exploded. I'm like, oh, I've forgotten all about that. Then it all made sense. All the memories of me doing that work for the U.S. all came back in at that time. So I thought it was a download, but it turns out it was a, you know, a series of memories.
And for those people who haven't seen it, can you show one of them?
Oh yeah. It's right here. Yeah. And It's just, a series of magnets, and beeswax and diamonds and other stuff. And what it does, it creates a field. See, the one in the SSP was electronic. So at the base here, it was like a micro USB kind of a thing. I don't know what it was exactly, but they plug it in. And that would charge it because there were batteries in here. That's why I don't use anything electronic, because it's too harsh on the nervous system of the human body. It forces change, and this just allows change. So yeah, that was it. It can't do anything that it did in SSP. Can't remove your memory. It can't move your consciousness. everything altogether. But the basic technology, this is an Ankh, basically, from Egypt. It's just an updated version, and that was for relieving issues in the body and for healing.
Isn't it also for balancing the chakras?
Yeah. When I first started building these, I didn't think about it in that term. I knew it was an energy device. It creates a piezoelectric energy. And if anybody knows anything about piezoelectric energy, it's created through crushing a crystal, putting pressure on a crystal, or forcing a magnetic field to go against itself. So this is a magnet. And if I were to take this off and put it that way, this is how it wants to normally rest on the device, because there are 13 more magnets in here. Okay. This is how it wants to rest. So what I do is I push it against its field and rest it there. And in doing that, it creates a piezoelectric energy. And that piezoelectric energy is an energy that is created in our brain, in the pineal, that area. And that's our nervous system energy. So that's why it interacts with it so easily.
Well, after watching this podcast, people may want to reach out to you and ask you questions. Are you open to that?
Of course, certainly.
Here for help. How do they contact you?
The easiest way to do it is to send me an email. And that's at deemsdevice@gmail.com. That's deemsdevice@gmail.com. Or they could go to deemscompany.com, and there's a video YouTube link that explains some of this stuff. The Deems, anyway, explains it there. If they want to know more, they can go there as well. But email is great.
Well, you've had an amazing life. Are you ever going to write a book about it?
Yes, I'm supposed to be doing that now as we speak.
Well, maybe that'll get you your $3 million.
Yeah, that was just supposed to be a payout, though, but whatever. I know they promised others a lot more than that. Hmm. You can promise anything, but you don't intend to keep it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, before we wrap it up, can you leave us with one last positive message?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said earlier, it truly is right now in our times up here on Earth. We're seeing so much negativity and difficulty. Know that all things must be in balance. So you can choose to look at the negative and all the negative things, or you can turn and realize there's equal positive and focus on that. And the more we do that, the less of the negative it'll dissipate. And that's where we are now. It's up to each and every one of us to raise our vibration in that way, and to focus in on love and light and light love, and understand it may be kumbaya, and our society says we don't want to be hippie kumbaya, but we kind of want to be hippie kumbaya, because that's our future in a beautiful way. And know that the future of Earth, even in the next few years, is going to be much more positive, as we go, and just be part of the change.
Chris, thank you for your message, and thank you for being my guest.
Oh, happy to be here, Jeff, anytime.